No problems? Good. Then you can go to sleep anyway. Otherwise, maybe you can think about a few things. Some of you will appreciate me finding a Scrabble anxiety illustration to put up there. Leave that to talk to you. If you've got a question about that, I'll tell you about it later. But I like what Charlie Brown said, that sometimes my anxieties have anxieties. Do an internet search of things that make us anxious, and you'll become more anxious than you ever thought you could be. The statistics and the information, sometimes misinformation, is enough to make me anxious. And then on top of that, I'm going to preach a sermon on anxiety today and even suggest it might be sinful to be anxious, and so now you're going to be more anxious because you're going to be worried about whether you're worrying too much. Have you been feeling more anxious in these times? A couple of weeks ago, I preached about depression. And so today, to add to that a little bit, do you find yourselves troubled more than normal? Do you find yourself worrying about things more than you typically would? So is this a time in which God basically is forcing us or allowing us to be forced? I'm not suggesting this is specifically His will, the things that we're facing. But is it a time that basically against our will, we're being forced to think in ways that we don't want to think about? Well, let's see if we can help each other a little bit. Can we do that? I want to try to be helpful today. Let's do a word study, first of all. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6 says, "Be anxious for nothing." Sounds pretty direct. In fact, Robertson says that the Greeks would have heard that word, and here's what they would have heard. Stop being anxious. Just stop it. Quit. Don't do that anymore. The King James says, be careful for nothing. The MNT translation says, do not worry about anything. The Greek word here translated in this passage in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6, be anxious for nothing or be careful for nothing, means to take thought of or to have care or to be care or careful about things. The word's found 17 times in the New Testament. And we're going to look at some of these. But the idea, again, these words we're looking at all say basically the same thing and can be translated. This word can be translated these different ways in this very same passage. Again, found 17 times in at least 17 verses in the New Testament. Matthew 6 that we just read together, it's found 6 times. And in the companion passage in Luke chapter 12, companion of Luke chapter of Matthew 6, and that it is found 3 times there. And Jesus said, don't worry. In Luke chapter 10 and verse 41, we have the familiar story and just mentioned it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through these passages, give some brief discussion about them, and then come back and look at the things I think we can learn as we put all of these ideas from God together. Martha's distracted. In fact, that's a key word. Hang on to that idea in verse number 40. She was troubled about these things. Jesus said to her when she was anxious about her sister helping her in verse 41, Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things. You're worried about these things. And so he tells her, these are things you don't have to worry about. Mary had chosen the better thing, the best thing, the one thing that's needed. And that was sitting at the feet of Jesus. And so sometimes we make choices between things that are good. We miss hospitality. When that gets to be practiced again, we're going to enjoy those times. That's a good thing to have people over and to fix a meal for people. But sometimes there's something a whole lot better. In this case, sitting at the feet of Jesus, listening to his teaching was the best thing she could do. And so those same words found there. There's some things not to be troubled about when you got to make some choices sometimes between good and best. In 1 Corinthians 7, in an interesting passage, in a present distress, whatever that was that the Corinthians were going through, Paul gave some advice, some warnings, if you will, some things for them to think about. He even says here in a couple of places, I'm giving you my opinions about these things. And one of those is, he suggested they didn't get married during those days. For whatever reason. I'm sure I understand all of that. But he makes some interesting statements. Verse 32, he says, I want you to be without care or concern. There's our word again. Anxious in Philippians 4. He who's unmarried cares for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world and how he may please his wife. So, guys, are you ever concerned about making your wife happy? May I suggest you should be? And you ladies, are you concerned about making sure your husband's happy? That's a good thing. And whatever the context here is, though, it seems to be to me that if you marry someone who didn't have the same values, same spiritual values as you, you'd be making a poor choice, and that would be cause some conflict between you serving the Lord and making them happy. In Corinth, if you married an idol worshiper, that's going to be a challenge. And they were learning. They were seeing that. They were seeing couples already married, and one of them would obey the gospel, and they had evidence that here's someone now struggling with, do I stay married to this idol worshiper who's got values completely different than mine? I've changed mine, and now I've got to go ahead and serve the Lord, and they're not interested in serving the Lord, so I stay married to them. Paul said yes. And so again, you see the idea. But would you be concerned? Should you be concerned? Sure you should be. In 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 25, we are all supposed to, in the body, care about one another. Our word, Philippians 4. And then Philippians 2:20, Paul was so thankful for Timothy, he said, I don't have anybody else who cares about you, the Philippians, like I do, besides Timothy. He cares about you. He's anxious about you. He's full of care about you. He gets troubled by you. His mind is stirred by the thought of you and concern for you. There's another word that's related, and I want to mention this one. And it has the idea of distraction. Remember I just mentioned the word distraction? The idea of solicitude, the idea of being solicited. You go up somewhere and you see a sign that says, no solicitors. And so what we have going on in our world are things that are soliciting our attention. In Matthew 13:22, in a passage we need to think about, and that is the soil full of thorns. What happens? How come we don't bear the fruit that we ought to bear? It's because we get distracted by the cares, concerns of this world. But on the other side of that, the other side of that idea, a positive picture, Paul said after all the things he had gone through in 2 Corinthians 11, in verse 28, he said, above all these things, my deep concern for all the churches. There's our word again. And then in the great passage that helps us in time like these, humble yourselves, he says in 1 Peter 5, verse 6, verse 7, casting all your care on him, for he cares for you. Companion passage of Philippians chapter 4. All right, let's think about some of these things. What are we going to learn from all of this? Number one, quit worrying about saying worried. I just want to say that. I conscientious people sometimes will say, well, I'm worried about them, and they'll stop in their tracks and say, well, I know I'm not supposed to say that. Stop that. Just don't wrangle about words. In fact, some contexts you ought to be worried about them. Some contexts there ought to be concerned. Sometimes we ought to say, I'm very thoughtful about this person. Do you see that? I'm cognizant of their needs, which allows me to segue into the next point. Thank you. Psychologists tell us that the number one, I have a love-hate relationship with psychology. Because I think a study of how the mind works is marvelous, as long as it includes God. Cognitive behavioral therapy is considered to be the most effective treatment when dealing with anxiety. Now, I want you to think about something. I want you to see two words in there. Cognitive. All right, you failed psychology class. That's okay. I'm going to help you with something. Think the word cog for a minute. And I know this is not the etymology of the word. But you know, you see a picture and you got the wheels turning, you got the cogs turning. Cognitive has to do with what's going on in here. Second word, behavior, has to do with what you do. So they're telling me, the psychologist, the American Psychology Association, the APA, tells me that this is number one to help people deal with anxiety. It says psychological problems are based sometimes on unhelpful ways of thinking. It says they're also caused by, I quote, learned patterns of unhelpful behavior. The treatment involves efforts to change thinking patterns, and the treatment usually involves efforts to change behavioral patterns. Question, has God said anything about how we think and what we do? Oh my. Really, that's where it all starts, right here. And the God who created us has got some marvelous things to say about what's going on and what we're using this for. All right. Time for some self-examination. What are you anxious about these days? What have I been anxious about? What have I been full of care? What have I been mindful of these days? What's my mind been full of these days? Remember that out of the abundance of the heart we speak. What's going on in here eventually comes out here. It's what we think about. Words say what we're thinking about. So, and I'm going to go through this list, and I tried to put them in the order of least to greatest, and I probably messed that up. But first of all, are you concerned that there's going to be college football this fall? I think I've told some of you this. You haven't heard this. The mayor of Tuscaloosa about 2 months ago said, listen, y'all, you better stay home if you want football this fall. Now, that's one way to get people's attention in the South. It's okay to think about that, perhaps. What I have learned, being an Indiana guy, being a basketball fan, realized that the sun came up when March Madness didn't happen. And life's gone on. And I've actually been able to smile and had some happiness. Now, save your breath coming up and tell me, say, Lee, Indiana wasn't going to win it this year, and you're exactly right. So I didn't have a big concern. But if I'd been a Dayton fan, I'd been pretty upset, I guess. So the point of it is they're minimal things, and you see that, you understand that, but maybe this time has made us aware a little bit of the things that we think about. Not being able to take a vacation, not being able to go to a concert. I mentioned that Betsy and I had take us to a concert, and we go to the Ryman once a year in July with some friends from Indiana to see a bluegrass show. Well, that's been canceled, and that's okay. I'm not going to lose any sleep by that. In fact, I can get my money back. But more seriously, will I get sick? Am I going to make somebody else sick? What's going to happen to people I love who have other health problems? Will I lose my job? Maybe that's not a big concern of anybody in this building. But what about my income? What about my retirement? One of you was sharing with me this, obviously, initially with the stock market had affected retirement plans. And then there's the psychological stuff. Am I being lied to? Is this a hoax? All of this is being overblown? Is the government taking away my freedoms? On and on. It is amazing, someone said, in the last 3 months, we have all become political, medical, and economic experts. If you don't believe that, read what your friends have to say on Facebook. So we're thinking about those things. Is it okay to think about some of those things? Sure. But to what extent is it affecting our lives? What are you going to eat? Thank you. You're a kind man, and he could hear what was going on behind this mask. What happens when I'm not speaking enough? We'll take care of that. Have you been worried about what you're going to eat, what you're going to wear? No, you haven't, have you? Your pantries are full. Pantries are full. And closets are full of clothes. Whoa, that's better. And I haven't either. In fact, most studies says most of us are putting on weight. I have. I've eaten more ice cream in the last 2 months than I've eaten in the last 5 years. I'm not sure why. It's just something to do. I risked my life to go in Lawrence Foods to get moose tracks. Risk Betsy's life, you know. I just think about food more than I thought about. What is going on here? Is that anxiety? Is that eating to alleviate anxieties? I got to tell you a story I love to tell. Several years ago, these folks are Christians, and Robbie's grown up to be a fine young man from what I can tell. He's just a young boy, about 10, 12 years old. We were at a basketball regional in Indiana. The first morning, two games had already been played, and so we went out to lunch together. I think we were in Terre Haute, and waiting for the night championship game, and so we were eating lunch, and Robbie, about 10 or 11, looked over at his dad and said, "Dad, where are we eating supper tonight?" While we're eating lunch. And his dad said, "Only in America does a kid ask that question." You know, it's time to be thankful. It's a time to realize how blessed we are. And we are, because not everybody else in the world and everybody dealing with this pandemic has those blessings. Not being with family, that's not been easy. Thankful that Betsy made it to Indiana. We both were tested earlier in the week. I don't expect you to shake my hand, but we found out we tested negative, thankfully. She wanted to make sure before she went up to see her mom, who has cancer. The cancer's come back. The ovarian cancer's come back. And worrying about how that's going to be treated. And mom's pretty down about it, but they're pretty excited to have Betsy up there finally. They hadn't seen them since February. And so Betsy's in Indiana with her mom and dad for a couple of weeks. That is not a plea for food, by the way. Okay, I'm going to be okay. But I'm thankful she made it. People thinking about that, concerned about that, and ought to be. And I know some of you are. I know Nancy and her mom and dad and trying, you know, all of that. It's just been an anxious thing. Are we sinning? I want to suggest to you here in a little bit, we're not. Do I think it can go so far that it affects our working in the kingdom? Yes, but I don't want you to feel guilty about being anxious about things we ought to feel anxious about. And I think the physical well-being of others is one of those things. The being able to meet with the church has been something we've been concerned about. Faithfulness. I know there's two fellows here concerned about the faithfulness of us. And I appreciate that. Is that wrong? Absolutely not. More things to say about that. So this, asking some good questions about what makes me anxious is a good thing. We do need to stop and think about what we need. For several years now, I'll read an article somewhere, and it will describe entertainment and recreation now as a need. That's not in Matthew chapter 6. There are a lot of things not in Matthew chapter 6. God said food, clothing. Boy, that's pretty minimal. I did something the other day. I got rid of something and wasn't going to do this or that. Betsy said, "You becoming a minimalist?" And I said, "Hardly. Look around. You know, not even close." But seriously, learning to be content. Are we going to learn that lesson through these times? And we're finding out that those are things we don't need after all. What if the things the world tells me, and this is interesting because psychology will tell me that I need some of that in order to alleviate anxiety, and now the things that have alleviated anxiety are now taken away, so now what? More anxiousness, huh? No, I realize that I don't need that to have a calm spirit and to be at peace. Do the things we don't need distract us from the things we need the most? That's a problem. It's a problem whether it's now, a year from now, or 5 years from now. Matthew 13:22 is a concern. The cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things gets in the way of doing the greater things. So I'll tell you what, narrowing down the things we think we need does help with feelings of anxiety. Learning to be content with what we have is a blessing God has given us. By the way, isn't it interesting? One news reporter said that spending has increased in these months, especially the first month or so. Easy to sit down. Amazon, where's Tracy at? He's outside, I guess. Tracy told me that UPS, it's been Christmas time. trying to get packages sent off to people. And people are buying. And sometimes that's a response to anxiety that you end up now and the bill comes and that anxiety piles up. So learn, think about, what do I need? And you'll be a happier person. And you realize that there's some things you don't need. Now listen, I'm not saying to you that there are some things going to come back. You know, my judgment, my opinion about it is, if it's not this year, would you like to be in World War II when there wasn't any sports at all? All sports were canceled for about 4 or 5 years. Would you have been grateful for that? I hope so. Been a troubling time. So if we don't have sports for a year, we'll be okay. And I imagine they'll come back if they don't this year. And we'll get to enjoy that, but I hope we enjoy it less. And I think Marlon wrote some things a while back, one of his emails, to make us think about that, and that's a good thing. So anyway, what do you need? What are you anxious about? What do you need? Matthew 6, three things. Putting God's rule over your life should be first. Recognizing that He does rule, realizing that we're not in control nearly as much as we think we are. We're finding that out right now. Things we'd like to have control, things we'd like to be able to say in our medical, economic, political expertise to tell others that this is what we ought to do. And if we did this, you did the way I think you ought to do it, we'd solve all this. We'd be done with this. But even if you've got all of the right answers, nobody in Washington is going to listen to you. I'm sorry. You haven't got time to vote them out and vote somebody else in that does listen to you. It's just things that are outside of our control. And that's sad to us, but it's okay. We're learning. There's just a lot of things we have no control over. We pray about things that we have no control over. That is the gist, I think, of Philippians chapter 4. Don't be anxious, rather pray. Cast your care upon Him, 1 Peter 5. And that brings the peace that surpasses all understanding. Realizing that God is in control, and that's a peaceful thought. But let me ask you this, and I think this is what Matthew 6:33 is talking about. Is He in control of me? I'm seeking God's rule. I'm not seeking the knowledge that He's in control of everything. I'm seeking His rule over me. And I'm acknowledging that He rules two things. The way I think and the way I do what I do. And I submit to Him and allow Him to do that. And so during this time, I'm asking the question, too. Is His rule, is His righteousness first? I know we don't like cliches because we think they're overused. And I'm sorry, I'm point behind there. We don't like them because we think they're trite and overused. Sometimes they are, one day at a time. It's a cliche from Jesus, one day at a time, Matthew 6:34. Don't borrow trouble. Remember one of our words in this word, anxiety? Martha, Martha, you're troubled about many things. Don't borrow trouble. Read this years ago. Wish I could go back and find it. Some university did a study about what people worried about, and it was incredible the high percentage of things that never happened that people worry about. Learning to think and act differently takes daily progress. That's a blessing. God's for us. He's working in us. We let His word sink in our hearts deeply. And He also tells us, listen, we're going to be troubles. There are going to be troubles. What Matthew 6:34 said. There's enough trouble today for you to worry, be concerned about today than you are. You know what I just did? Did you see what I just did? I backed off using the word worry. So anyway, I'll get over that one of these days. If you're worried about the troubles that are taking place today, they may be okay. Do it one day at a time. And finally this morning, anxiety over worldly things should not leave us ineffective in doing the Lord's work. You know who I think the most the person who was the least anxious of anybody I've ever known was Jesus. He could sleep on the bottom of a boat in the middle of a storm, middle of the Sea of Galilee. The least anxious person I know, and certainly about things of this world. But being full of care about the Lord's work will lead us to do His work. We need to be anxious about those things. And that includes, by the way, physical needs and concerns, especially of our own. That's called benevolence. We need to be concerned. And that's okay. We still pray about those things, but it's okay to be concerned. We're not violating any passage. But let me say this too. Be anxious. Be troubled. Be concerned. Be worried about the spiritual well-being of others. Because that's what the Bible tells us we ought to be. It's okay. So if you start to say to somebody, I'm really worried about how they're doing. Oh, wait a minute, I'm not. No, you're supposed to. You're supposed to be. Now, I understand even in these things, pray to God, but it's okay for me. In fact, let me say to you, if we're not, then I'm not sure we're thinking the way God wants us to think. What fascinates me about the letter to the churches of Asia, the whole book, Revelation, but what fascinates me about Revelation 2 and 3 is listening to Jesus talk to seven churches in the midst of some persecution. In fact, he tells one of the churches in chapter 2 and verse number 10, they were going to be thrown into prison by the devil for 10 days. In the midst of all of that, what was he concerned about? Leaving your first love, lukewarmness, flat out deadness, allowing false doctrine to be involved in the church. Oh, wait a minute, Lord, don't you realize what these people are going through? Yes, I do. And I'm taking care of that. That's the big picture of Revelation. He was going to punish the ones that had persecuted them. Justice will be served. I'll take care of that. But my first concern about all of you is lukewarmness, deadness, left your first love, and so on. Teaching, encouraging, correcting, reproving, and rebuking are things we have still got to be doing in a world that's troubled by many things. Hey, are you ready to think in terms that Jesus calls us to think? I think you are. I believe you are. And I hope the lesson kind of gets us to think along that way. If you want the peace that God offers, we've got to think the way He thinks. His thoughts and His ways, Isaiah 55, must become our thoughts and our ways, and then spiritual growth will take place. I really believe that spiritual growth can take place in these days, and will continue to do so in your heart and in mine. I appreciate you listening to this. Thank you. God bless you. Let's prepare to eat the supper and be reminded of the greatest things ever been done for us.
Before we take the Lord's Supper together, we're going to sing number 242.